Blog Talk Radio. Without that expense, visit are found on Amazon.com on the Late Night Poets. I urge you guys to support the program by purchasing a copy for yourself or for a friend if it contains your poetry. It's a nice gift, a little boost to your ego at the same time. Well, Pam, are you with us, my dear?
I am. Yes, I am. Hello there, Lauren. How's it going?
Pretty good, Pam. I think I forgot to mention this. If this is in our craft or so in art, just the title of the show. That's all.
Well, yep. That
so
is
what
it is.
What did you think of the contest? What did you think of the contest?
Oh, my goodness. First of all, great prompts that you chose. Love Henry Miller. I mean, I have to be honest, I really haven't read him other than reading his quotes and reading about him, but I think he seems like such a fascinating figure, the way like you were talking about how there were no taboos. He simply laid it all out, and people don't like that. People don't always like, you know, especially back in his time when, you know, you were very direct about vulgarity and sexuality. So fascinating prompt, and the responses we got, oh my goodness gracious, quality and quantity, just good stuff all around. And I'm definitely looking forward to tonight's show.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for those kind words, Pam. I saw you had written me a little message concerning Aleister Crowley. Was that the one?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, I thought it would just be something, you know, I really, I can't say that I agree with the man all the time as far as maybe perhaps morals and beliefs go, but you know what? He was another fascinating character. Prompts that I would love to see what people get from. But, you know, I figured I'd toss that out there for you for food for thought.
Well, I'm catching it, and I'm throwing it right back to you. So if we can collaborate on that contest, if you can find some of the stuff that interests you, I'll pitch right in and
absolutely.
We'll get it done. That's great.
All right. Sounds like
pressure's off for the next one.
All right. Sounds like an awesome plan. Oh, here's a fun fact. My mom and my maternal grandfather both have the same birth date as Henry Miller.
Really?
Yep.
Well, you know, somebody has to have the same birthday. Well, you know, it's better having the same birthday of Henry Miller than, for instance, Adolf Hitler. But that can't be very funny.
This is very true. And you know there's somebody out there who has the same birthday as Adolf Hitler.
You know that there were actually some kids who were called Adolf. They were born in the late 30s, early 40s. I think they all changed their name.
I believe it. Yeah. I know. I would have. You know. But it is really a shame because, you know, it's actually, you know, a strong name of German tradition that, if I remember right, means something to do with wolves or the wolf, you know. But,
really?
You know, when somebody, yeah. And I mean, it's a name that's been around a long time. So, you know, not that I think it's the best name ever, but you just think about the fact how one person can completely ruin a name.
Yeah, like who wants to be called Donald?
Yeah.
maybe back when he was only a
duck, but not anymore.
That's absolutely correct. Not anymore. No. Well, I assume you'll let me know if anyone's hanging out on the phone at any point.
Absolutely. As of right now, we have nobody calling in. I do see Naomi hanging out on the board, the Late Night Poets Room. And so, hello, Naomi.
Yeah.
Good to see you.
She's quacking. Okay. Come on,
morning
quack there, young lady. All right, why don't we get started with the first read? I'll leave it up to you.
All right. Sounds good. got to grab the first poem for you to read. And we have Lonely by Ben Hart. And go ahead, please, Lauren, and give that a read.
I will. Lonely. Morning star rising. Father, you were wrong to steal Adam. I'm going to begin again. Father, you were wrong to steal Eden from Eve and make her Adam's failure. But Father, that was then, and I, for one, would like to see us all absolved. So forgive what you learned to love against. Sam, if I cannot go on, call me home from tides of woe, the flames of soul. Heal my hands, hold my head carefully, like death held our hourglass. Relinquish, reprieve, one with faith made me whole. My Lord, my glorious Lord, will you love? I am ready to leave. Liar, I don't believe you when you say he was your first love, because we both know you fell for violence first, and just like the way that one hurt. Find me. I don't feel well in this oasis of time. I feel somehow more mindful of death, more at peace with her presence. And I don't know if I should follow. What she says will lead me from peace back into vengeance. I don't feel well, but I'm not relenting until you find me. Dwindle and die. Slow falling in love, gone with the snow, between hands empty that were warmer before the storm, before the truth felled me and you at the roots. Collision course. It doesn't matter where we're going. We're all going down. And it would have gladdened the sad old man to have seen less of the world from his house on the rise. And instead, I've seen it divided over the men that made these hills. The ghosts, he now keeps quiet. At nights, the wind carries far. Because this new world, kinder needs need not be reminded. The red mist of war, the freedoms that come to fall. No, they don't need it anymore. The retreat, the end of our alignment, our dance around Icarus suns, a retreat of reprieve. It was you walking out, but I watched hope leave, and the light with it. End poem.
Great read there, Lauren. Yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, wonderful read there. I'm sorry. Did you want me to comment first?
Yeah, please.
Okay. I like this. One of the thoughts, as always, a powerful vignette, amazing imagery and metaphors. One of the first thoughts that came to my mind as you were reading it and I was looking at the words was the idea that there's, the relationship between fathers and sons. First of all, and if I remember right anyways, we have Morning Star Rising, a reference being to that Lucifer's name means, the Morning Star. And then bringing in Father, you were wrong to steal Eden from Eve. You know, here we have Lucifer, the fallen angel, addressing his father. And then we bring to the my Lord, my glorious Lord, which can be, another reference to a father figure. And the slowing, the dying, the saddening of the old man. And then the mention of Icarus, who despite his father's warning, flew too close to the sun, was too rebellious, and therefore died for it. I really thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors. To me, it also spoke on the fear of facing something new that will guide you beyond the comfort zone of understanding. And I think the imagery and metaphor is the part that speaks about wanting to stay on your house in the hill, to see the world from there, speaks on that idea of not wanting to go beyond your boundaries of comfort. And then the end line, the retreat of reprieve, it was you walking out, but I watched hope leave and the light with it, that burning away of that light of hope. So amazing, right? And very well done.
And then an amazingly good comment, Ben. You covered most of the ground very efficiently. Let me just mention this. In the stanza, it doesn't matter where we're going, we're all going down. And it would have gladdened the sad old man to have seen less of the world from his house upon the rise, and instead have seen it invited over the men that made these hills. Now that part of it struck me hard. It was the use of a wish by the old man to have seen less from his doorstep of the world. It invites the conclusion of dark times, having been befallen him where you live. You know, and they offered the hope that others further away would share in the calamities of the world. And that seems such a plaintive wish. Well, maybe wistful, maybe even resigned, you know, to fate, to life, to what has happened. That part just struck me hard. He's such a skillful writer. And those lines were perfectly done, I thought. Bravo, Ben, as usual. Well done. That brings us to our next one, Ben.
Yes, it does. Let me just quickly type out a number here, and then I will gladly give that a read. I thought maybe perhaps I would encourage some of our board hangers to, call in. So with that being said, up next, we have No Names by Garanwi. Needing for a moment a challenge in the smile, our eyes tell each other we're standing much too close, thinking that it's sexy with a look of lust of knowing that we could. Reading Henry Miller, embracing what he's written, wondering when we will be kissing one another, exploring with our fingers naked on the floor in passions of the moment, abandoning all words, just sexing in his imagery, talking with our flesh in a capricorn of sounds, an orgasm coming from wide open mouths. I wonder what's our names, parting silently, leaving guiltily, with an afterglow, holding on to passion in a sexiness recalled, safe in knowing we will never meet again until we find next time. End poem.
Well read there, Pam. I enjoyed that. And I enjoyed this poem by Garanwi. He used prompt 10. Sex is one of the 9 reasons for reincarnation. The other 8 are unimportant. Now, he's not the only one to use that. I had done that. When I read the poem, it brought to mind that penetrating stare from a stranger in whose eyes you read, I would. We could. You know, there's an involuntary insouciance about the tone, a freewheeling sexual dynamism to the phrase that I found very invigorating. The way he ends it, parting silently, leaving guiltily with an afterglow, that's how real it was in the mind, introducing in the second stanza the reading Henry Miller, embracing what he's written, wondering when we will be kissing one another. It's an interesting reference to his lifestyle as well, and the way he wrote rather passionately. I'm reminded of that poem, The Zipless, F-U-C-K, I forgot her name, where two people meet, decide they have sex immediately, do so, and then leave almost without saying a word. And this is like that, but without the physicality. It all occurs in the mind, so I thought that was very well done. How about you, Fan?
Oh, this is great. I mean, it's absolutely a captivating look at raw sexuality and lust. And I like that, as you were saying, there's not a whole lot of physicality. I mean, first they start out with reading Henry Miller, embracing what he's written. So they've come to the conclusion that their minds are, they're having a meeting of the minds before having a meeting of the flesh. I like how this also works as a tribute to Henry Miller and his style, especially with talking with our flesh in a Capricorn of sound, an orgasm coming from wide open mouths. I wonder what's our name. I like that part because it's the whole idea that you don't even have to remember your own name in the moment. You only need to be focused on the pleasure that you're experiencing and nothing else. So brilliant write and very well done.
And that was a fine comment. Thank you, Ted, so much. Yeah, I think we're going to enjoy these poems today. All right.
Oh, absolutely. And up next, we have another treat, In Solitude by Richard Wiseman. And we have an audio for that. So let me find that. And here we go.
In Solitude by Richard Wiseman. The stale air crinkles through mine's ear. Imaginary collapse of my cardio cage revives. As I ease into the void in solitude, volcanic vomitings of my inmost essence and hot lava sex sputterings still wound me, while death flosses her razor-sharp yellow teeth, ever hovering over my left shoulder, her cold breath waiting, watching silently. Still I write, as blanched numbers flash across the liquid screen. Red devils and white angels cloak inner emptiness in cold blue emoticons. In solitude, I sharp listen. Beyond death's rattled hallway, whispers flood the gray, frozen charnel grounds. Old masters canter between hurricanes and doldrums, calling through lonesome snapshots of this frozen valley. Come. End of poem.
Thank you, Richard. That's a great SoundCloud. This was written to prompt number 7. An artist is always alone. If he is an artist, know what the artist needs is loneliness. And you know, you can use the word loneliness. You can use the word solitude as well. When he says, as I ease into the void in solitude, easing into the void, I might almost say easing into the nest, that comfortable place of loneliness, the necessary solitude. And you know, there's a difference between being alone or being lonely and needing the solitude. Maybe we have to look at both of those in the same way. You can't really do writing if the family is buzzing all about you, and then inviting you into the conversations and bothering you with this and that. You have to be alone. And in this case, it almost seems as if death is imminent because I sharp listen beyond death's rattled hallway, whispers flood the gray, frozen charnel grounds. And then he mentions the old master, the old masters who are calling him come. So if he's not dead, he's very close to death. It would seem to me, or perhaps the spirit of death meets you closely when you're in that kind of solitude, because you're alone with it and nothing else. What did you think of this, Pam?
Oh, I think this is absolutely powerful. You know, I truly believe that inside every poet and creative person is this beast that howls at pain, howls at sex, howls, you know, at life and the moon. And there's certain poems that hold up a mirror to that idea. And for Richard, this is that poem. This is the poem where I see the beast inside Richard howling, especially in lines like volcanic vomitings of my inmost essence and hot lava sex sputtering still wound me, while death flosses her razor-sharp yellow teeth ever hovering over my left shoulder. I mean, this is absolutely an amazing write. And, you know, I do see it speaking on the idea of how it's difficult when you have so much going on in your life and so much going on in your mind of getting that sense of peace, getting that sense of that silence that you need in order to vomit it all out, in order to get everything out that needs to be said within your poetry. And just amazing imagery and metaphors all the way through, and very well done.
Hi, Pam?
Yeah?
Yeah, let's look at those lines. Volcanic vomiting is in my innermost essence, and hot lava sex sufferings still wound me. I took that to mean that what is bubbling up inside of him, the activity in his mind, his frustrations, all of that, are things that he wants to banish from his mind in order to write. Because if they wound him, they bother him, they stop him from accomplishing what he wants to accomplish. And I wonder if that's the howling that you mentioned, because to me it's not so much a howling, it's the howling that may bother him. I'm not sure.
I could see that. I could see that. But I do think howling is a great way to purge the mind. So, yeah, I can definitely see what you're saying.
It really is.
Because, you know, there is a sense of needing to rid oneself of what weighs heavily, purging oneself. So, yeah, great observation.
Purge is very good there. It's very good there. Now, if you take the poem Howl by Ginsberg, now there is a man who is howling, you know what I mean?
Oh, definitely.
Vocal statement after vocal statement after vocal statement. Again, that void that he talks about is to me almost like a nest, a place of necessary solitude, not loneliness. Well, we've spent some good time on this poem, and now let's move on.
And let's see what we have next. Oops, you know, I got so distracted by our conversation no, that's my fault. I wasn't quite on the ball. I should have this down to a science by now, but sometimes science fails. All right, so let's see here.
That darn technology.
Right? All right. Up next, we have Be Impetuous, New Bursts Over the Universe by Rolling Stone. And go ahead, please, Laurent, and give that a read for us.
Okie dokie. Be Impetuous, New Bursts Over the Universe. Angels of rain and light on the blue surface of thine airy, bright hair uplifted from heads, fierce horizons of zenith's height. O wild wind, breath of autumn's being, from whose unseen presence leaves until azure sister of spring shall blow dreaming earth, clarion fill to feed the air, flocks of lilling hues, summer dreams in Mediterranean blue, crystalline streams. All in flowers sweet, the Atlantic's level cleaves far below, sea blooms and oozy woods with rare sapless foliage, where oceans know a pumice isle in the Isthmus Bay, where swift clouds fly with thee, comrades wandering over heaven, deep tones, sweet gladness, spirit fierce. Quicken new births over the universe, hearts among mankind, lips to awaken earth. Be impetuous, O prophecy, O wind, mighty harmonies of vapors, triumph not far behind. And I guess this is based on one's destination is never a place, but rather a new way of looking at things. Pam, would you kick us off?
Absolutely. Wonderful read there, Lauren. It's so great to see that Rolling Stone was inspired by one of your prompts. Brilliant imagery and metaphors throughout. As always, he's a top-notch poet. The main thought I got was this on the idea of finding our voice to claim the victory. And I like how he uses nature imagery to speak on the power within nature and within ourselves. And even in those things that you think don't have power, like in the third stanza where he says, all in flowers sweet and sapless foliage where oceans know a pumice isle and the isthmus bay. I think of the idea when you see trees and rocks that grow out of, or not rocks, sorry, you know, trees and flowers that grow out of crevices on cliffs or in rocks, and you think of the power that plant has to split that rock with its roots, and be impetuous, O prophecy, O wind. Mighty harmony, the vapors triumph not far behind. You know, when we use our voice, when we speak up, when we use what is our strengths and our gifts, then there will be a triumph of the spirit. And there's just so much great imagery in this all the way through that definitely a strong voice, right? And very well done.
Yes, indeed. And you mentioned a triumph in the spirit, I think. And I do see that. And it's the triumph of the spirit that is a result of a larger vision. I'll quote, quicken new births over the universe, hearts among mankind, lips to awaken earth. Be impetuous, O prophecy, O wind, mighty harmonies of vapors. Triumph not far behind. And it is a larger vision seen through the lens of new life. It's an appropriate and cosmic look at the world. This is very well turned out, a shorter piece than most of his perhaps, but long on its layers and its nuance. A real pleasure to read.
Absolutely.
Right. Off we go, Pam.
All right, up next we have Taboos, Sex, Reincarnated. Taboos and Sex Reincarnated by Naomi Sarah. And Naomi was nice enough to supply us with a recording. So here we go.
Taboos and Sex Reincarnated, 1984. My toes dig into cracked brown fennel as Stephen hangs over me. Like a panting chihuahua, our skin sweaty, dripping thick as gasoline. And all I see is the priest's face reddening, his gruff voice climbing octaves until he is railing against lust and shrieks, not once pronouncing the diabolical S word. God forbid, his beady eyes drilling into me, shouting, save yourself from marriage. Save yourself from eternal burning damnation. And here I am in the back seat of an old Buick doing it for the first time with this boy who spends all English class slipping love poems under my desk, who got hit in the nose with a baseball because he couldn't stop staring at me. And all I can think about is how I just walked straight up to the gates of hell and swung those doors wide open, 2023. My toes dig into cold, damp grass. All I see is Alan's face and his breath mingling with mine, invisible puffs, thinking, I am too old for outdoor sex, until he pulls me to him, kissing me hard, and I'm leaning into him, my head thrown back, both hands gripping his shoulders as we rock back and forth, purring and moaning, spitting out Hail Marys as if the devil will come knocking tomorrow. And if he does, this diabolical act God bless will be what saves me, a go-to sweet release that will get me through the days.
Great sound, Claude, Naomi. Well read, well written. Taboos and sex reincarnated. You know, the taboo of teenage sex or sex before marriage is not really so much of a taboo anymore. It's been broken years and years. But yeah, there are still people who consider that a necessary thing. The beginning of this is quite brilliant. We have Steve hanging over her like a panting chihuahua, our skin sweaty, dripping thick as gasoline. And right in the middle of the whole thing, we have the priest's face taking center stage, railing against lust in shrieks, not once pronouncing the diabolical S word, God forbid. You know, it's. I've often wondered how they can speak so forcefully and so faithfully against human nature. It's as if the priest decides that, or God has decided that human nature, and that's ironic because he made man, then he gave man the nature that he has. So saving yourself from marriage is not something that's happening, but it's what she's thinking about right in the middle of the moment. And I thought that was great. I had a chuckle out of the boy who spends all English class slipping love poems under my desk. Never let it be said that love poetry won't catch you what you want, because it did. And the images of the gates of hell opening up, wide open, is also very nicely done. Thinking I'm too old for outdoor sex. Yeah. So that's an easy one, really, because, well, here, let me read it. My toes dig into cold, damp grass. All I see is Alan's face and his breath mingling with mine in visible puffs, thinking I'm too old for outdoor sex. And if he does his diabolical act, God bless, that will be what saves me, a go-to sweet release that will get me through the days. Yeah, the whole poem to me was very visually impactful. She grabbed those two props and used them to bring us a moment that I think everybody can share. Again, I don't think there are any great taboos here, but there were taboos. And, you know, we've all aspired to that one way or another. The nectar of sweet release. And it's that nectar, Naomi, that helps us survive. Because that is something the human animal will fight for. Still is very death. Pam?
Well, first of all, I really like what you had to say there. Great comment there, Lauren. This is just, I have to say, awesome. Because, first of all, the humor in it. I mean, as Stephen hangs over me like a panting chihuahua, I mean, you can just picture it. I'll have to share with Naomi sometime if she hasn't already read it, the poem I wrote about losing my virginity. I think she'll get a big kick out of it. But yeah, I like how, and as you were saying, you know, there really isn't taboos anymore. We become more open-minded when it comes to sex. And yeah, it would be great if we all lost our virginity to someone that was our true love and going to stay our true love. But that's not the reality of life. And sometimes you just right. have to appreciate what you have in the moment, you know. And but this is all those voices of society that needle at you, either from the pulpit or from magazines you read or just the gossip around the water cooler, whatever. First you have the voice of the preacher who says to your youthful self, you know, that you are sinning as you're losing your virginity in the backseat of an old Buick. And then she brings us forward to 2023 where she thinks, I am too old for outdoor sex. And who's telling her she's too old for outdoor sex? There's always, you know, these little needling jabs and jokes and, you know, things that society says about what age a woman or a man should be when they stop desiring sex. And, you know, if you're with the right person, it's different for everyone, but, you know, with the right person, in the right moment, you know, just banish all those thoughts. You know, of course, you know, be safe, and all that, you know, motherly advice that I like to give. Grab those condoms, you know. but the fact that there is, I love how her end lines speak on the idea that there is a saving grace, a beauty in the physical act of lovemaking. So wonderful, right, Naomi, and very well done.
Great comment, Ben. All right, what are you bringing us to now?
All right. Up next, we have Sunday Winter Morning by Ken Smith. 16, my first day picking up the full load of cans of milk in the 5-ton truck. Its square nose with the gray plastic grill and the faded yellow bow tie in the center, the symbol that said it was a Chevrolet, and how the engine just went dead in a farmer's yard, soft white flakes falling in a snow globe. And I got out and raised the hood, me, the guy who blew up a voltmeter in shop class, and that was the faded bow tie. Now, not a cross of my suffering, stranded. When I noticed a bare wire hanging free from the alternator, I grabbed the rusty pliers from the glove box, threaded the wire back into its clip, and clamped the clip back onto the tongue of the alternator, and the engine started back up, and I rubbed the snow out of the yellow bow tie, the faded cross that saved my day so many miles from the city. And poem.
Well read, my dear. That is nice. You know, I have to say that this particular poem is kind of homespun, if you will. It's a charming story, real life, and it's the world of those who have to work 7 days a week sometimes. Farming is not easy, and at 16 years old, you're expected to shoulder your load. So when he says 16, my first day picked up a full load of cans of milk, the 5-ton truck. Now at 16, I was still riding a bicycle. I wasn't responsible for a full load of milk. I enjoy the fact that in farm life, young people are elevated to a position of responsibility, greater responsibility than they have in non-farm life. And the simplicity of the story illustrates so well the prompt. Life moves on whether we act as cowards or heroes. Life has no other discipline to impose. If we would but realize it, then to accept life unquestioningly. And that's precisely what he did here. And the guy who blew up a voltmeter in shop class and was a faded bow tie, now not a cross of my suffering, stranded. But he accepts life, and he meets it head on, and he fixes it. And I thought that was great. He's doing exactly what he should be doing. And, you know, I had left a comment on this, but I don't think I ever pressed the comment button because I don't see it here, which is a shame. But I'll have to re-comment. How about you, Pam? What did you think?
Oh, I thought this was a brilliant write. And I love how within his storytelling and his simple and straightforward imagery, we see such layeredness in Ken's writing. This makes me think of my father's first truck, which was a red GMC from like the late 1930s. So it wasn't his first. It had first belonged to his father. And, you know, I think that I love how this speaks on those simple, unglorified moments that brings change and growth. Like this was a moment where Ken realized, a young 16-year-old Ken realized that he was capable of more than he thought possible of himself. You know, that there was this kind of growing and maturing, this slightly becoming of a man. And it wasn't witnessed by anybody except this old truck and maybe the good Lord himself. And I like his attention to detail, how he talks about how he fixed the alternator and the faded cross that saved my day so many miles from the city. I feel like this kind of speaks in a sense of renewal of faith. And I also like the imagery of flakes falling like in a snow globe, because that is so true. There are some times when the snowflakes flutter and fall, you feel like you're living in that snow globe. And I think that also makes a good metaphor for feeling almost like closed in before the horizons of your life begin to expand. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And up next, oops, let me try that again. See if I'm not on the bowl today. Oh, man. And I'm getting used to this. I have this new Kindle Fire, which is great because my old one died and I needed a new one. And you would think that being the exact same device that it would be, you know, the keyboard would be exactly the same. But no, it's not. So I keep trying to adjust to this new keyboard. So
the new Fire is nice. I like the new Fire.
What's that?
I like the new Kindle Fire. It's a nice machine.
It is. It is. Oh, I absolutely love it. And it's, oh my goodness, it's great. I'm so thankful to have it. I just have to get some time to, and it'll happen soon enough with all the reading and commenting and contests and stuff. Before you know it, I'll have the keyboard. It'll be like second nature. And up next, we have Spit and Demolish, Black Towers Captors Power by Liquid Mind Forever. And go ahead, please, Laurent, and give that a read.
Certainly. Spit and Demolish, Black Towers Captors Power. You're not hearing me. You regurgitate my words like a steel fist, cold as a fish with an RPG missile pointed at its target. No intention, no hope for reconciliation, only bites, sights set for slaughter. Have you ever seriously considered who I am truly, or given thought to inhumanity's slam-bam, thank-you-ma'am relationships, Pearl Jam scam? Kamikaze fighter pilot's disdain gains third-world recognition, a long-ago illumination, a solo premonition, opposition's recondite omission. Vicious, suspicious, illiterate, superstitious, Epicurean dishes, tray delicious. Iran is positioning for prehensile attack. Acts, in fact, a total lack of backbone. Clones infected with sedition. Domestication's reconditioning. You spit and spew facts, data chatter, intended to act, hit back, tick-tack, wax back, hack into memory pips, frosted, defrosted tripe, trying to grip, whip, ziplock its victims into submission, dismissing, dissing, hissing, by smearing fear like feces into every orifice, treating us as a rhesus monkey, experimented, circumvented upon, the spawn a foregone yawn, a dawn of revitalization's integration gone haywire. Desire's pragma, dire to acquire recidivism's pardon. Who's the warden? Where, oh where has all the gore and foredrawn conclusions gone? Song sung, a cappella, solo, nello contender. A parachute shot forth, a spring to pull, a death presented, dementia, with eyes pried shut, wide butts and sluts gutted, hideous critters of critical mass hysteria. Speak to me not of world events, presidential circumvents, hell-bent upon control, with no parole and no hope for rehabilitation's foal. Our role, your toll, word's goal, to foil, to boil, in bitches bewitching oil. no moil to recoil, just spoil. A harvester's crop at a drop, a flop in flop won't stop. Send me no fat sheets, darts, year-end reports. Deport hope, resort to wart, retort your sport, contortions cohort. Abort, snort in the thud of crud, din, conspire to win, thin. Virgins of marginal gain, stain of rain's bane, remains in towers, black tower of spit and demolish. End poem. All right, fam.
Bravo.
With it.
Absolutely. Bravo there, Lauren. Wonderful read. Well, first of all, I see that Liquid Mind Forever did put some explanation there, AN, which I highly encourage people to read. I'm always a little torn, honestly, when people do that. On one hand, especially when you have such, the kind of abstract and thought-provoking imagery and metaphors that a writer like Liquid Mind Forever has, it's nice to have that AN that offers a little bit of extra information. On the other hand,
yep.
I admit that stubbornly, I like to think for myself and come up with my own ideas for a poem, even if they turn out to be wrong. But still, it's just always a treat to listen to her be read. Powerful imagery and metaphors, hard-hitting lines, a brilliant use, as always, of inner and end rhyme. I really like how, to me, the first part makes me think of the quote or something that says something along the lines of, people often listen, not with the intent of listening, but with the intent of forming a response. So oftentimes we're so busy pre-planning our response to someone that we truly don't hear their words. We don't get what they're trying to tell us. I like, you spit and spew facts, data chatter intended to quack, quack, hit back, tic-tac, whack, smack, hack into memory quips, accosted, defrosted, tripe, trying to grip, whip, ziplock its victims into submission, dismissing, dissing, hissing by smearing fear like feces. I love how that speaks on those fear mongers, those people who just want to throw facts in your face but truly don't understand humanity. Or the power within a conversation. It's truly an amazing write on the battle against BS thrown about by those rancid and decaying minds that refuse to evolve. So amazing write and very well done.
Well, that was a great comment, my dear. I was smiling all the way through it. I'm not sure of the reference to Black Tower's captured power, unless it's something from The Lord of the Rings or the other modern author, Stephen King, perhaps. She uses prompts 8, 6, and 4, which are basically, we do not talk. We bludgeon one another with facts and theories. And we are a vulgar, pushing mob whose passions are easily mobilized by demagogues, newspaper men, religious quacks, agitators, and such like. And number 4, our own physical body possesses a wisdom which we will inhabit, which we who inhabit the body lack. We give it orders which make no sense. And her poem in the third stanza, to me, is the vision incarnate of how we communicate with each other these days. Ziplock and split victims into submission, dismissing, dissing, hissing by smearing fear like feces into every orifice, treating us as a rhesus monkey. And, that's what the other side does. They want to scare you. They want to be the savior, the people who will save you from the things that scare them. So they whip up fear. And that's exactly what the prompt says. Passions are easily mobilized by demigods. And that's true. That is exactly how they do it. They whip you up and tuck you into your pocket and take your money and then act against you. And these people act in their own self-interest sometimes. I thought that Deborah did a great job with this. It's a stripping away of the mask or the masks that society wears, that everybody wears, but then telling it like it is. And I like that. All right, Pam, on to the next one.
All right. Well, up next we have Krakolor by Eski. And it goes like this. These castle walls are built from wet sand imprinted with the hope of 9-year-old hands, barefoot mirrors that snared the cloud, playing blind man's buff with a relentless tide, taken hostage by the sad men, cheekbones and emptiness wrapped in frailty, hemorrhaging bitterness and whispers under the pig's head and grapes left on the vine, baying hounds bark borrowed memories, savage history hides behind the rusting gate, empty windows haunt with a black-eyed stare, mumbling relentless disapproval, murmuring sibilant homilies of a sepia holocaust to xenophobic whispers draped in November poppies, futile anger mute behind a razor wire conscience, decades of empty bottles screaming in a silent truth, toothless acceptance etched on weathered faces, embracing futility in a ceremonial nicotine embrace, hollow-cheeked and ivory-lipped, living this bitter death for so long, like a songbird captive in a glass jar, a striking metaphor for blind faith, the complexities of infinity elucidated through a transparent nexus, frigid in isolation, pinned by the voyeur's glare, fluffing our damp feathers to lessen the void with the yoke of aspiration around our necks. These poems do not a poet make. End poem.
Nice read, Pam. Very well done. Like a songbird captive in a glass jar, striking metaphor for blind faith, the complexities of infinity elucidated through a transparent nexus. And like a songbird, we make verbal music in our own magnificent isolation, always aspiring to more than we are, I think. I like the way that Esti uses the words with a yoke of aspirations around our necks. He uses prompt number 7. The artist is always alone. If he is an artist, no, what the artist needs is loneliness. So when I say that we make verbal music in our magnificent isolation, it is, again, it is that solitude that we seek that allows us to get into that headspace that lets us sometimes be more than we are. I know this is an excellent poem. The striving and the writing, the fluffing of damp feathers to lessen the void. Now, another poem, poet talked about the void, that place he wants to be. And here we have one who wants to lessen the void with the yoke of aspiration around our necks. Because perhaps he finds he needs that interaction with others. Not sure about that. That's what it seems to be. Now, why don't you go ahead and give us your interpretation.
Well, I really like this poem. As always, I'm just impressed with Eski's writing, who is a wonderful rhyming poet, but obviously is just as wonderful when he delves into free verse. I like how the initial thought I had on this was the harsh truth of empty words built of wet sand and torn silk, and how these are not the kind of things that true poetry is made out of. It's not made out of those wisps of flimsy stuff. But the other thing I see within this is I see such a sense of conflict. In fact, The imagery of hemorrhaging bitterness and whispers under the pig's head and grapes left on the vine, baying hounds bark, borrowed memories, savage history, really made me think of one of my all-time favorite books, which is The Lord of the Flies, and the imagery of the young boys and the pig's head that they put up on the spear, and how they started out innocent and then became as corrupt of a society as the adults. And I see within these lines myself that same kind of corruption that hollows the soul and leads people astray to the point where there is no longer that poetic voice speaking. So just an absolutely amazing write and very well done. And let's see what we have next. Next we have Who Are You by Gerald E. Green. And Gerald was nice enough to supply us with a recording. But before that, I would like to bring on Miss Naomi Sarah. So welcome, Naomi.
Hello.
Glad you can join us.
Hello. I don't know if I have the energy to comment much, but I can help you read. I'm pretty tired.
Well, we greatly appreciate you being here. All right, here we go.
Who Are You? Written and read by Gerald Green. Alone, the white-haired poet reads the prompt and mulls its meaning under lights of varying hues to find a hidden meaning for the few. The dusty square table with overflowing ashtray and old metal half-filled waste can next to the even older wooden chair on casters balance the scene of worthless books stacked like stalagmites against each wall. This is home, where words congeal and brilliance hides beneath fresh thought in morning's silence, when chicks are fledged to deep woods beyond the city plat. Smoke from cheap cigars represents what can't be written, what won't be said, what few would understand as ticks of kitchen clocks reach out to deafened ears. The early morning sky reveals a transient pink, alerting those who know its time and understand its pace that hastens blood, swirling with cheerful demeanor as a friend would greet a friend. In this moment, this very moment, a newly conceived verse comes forth, covered with vernix casosa, waiting to be presented to its now exhausted mother. To be alone is seldom lonely for the craving artist who hungers for loneliness when not alone. The question, then, is plain for those who imitate and hope for inspiration leading to a lasting legacy. End poem.
Great song, Claude Gray, Mr. Green. Thank you so much for that. I enjoyed this a lot. There's a number of things in this that I'll comment on in a moment. But if we could start with Pam, I'd appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. It's always wonderful to see when Gerald is inspired. And the, his reading voice is just, he's got a great performance voice. That is for sure. I love how he brings us into the everyday, such relatable imagery. The books that get stacked up, I don't know about anybody else, but man, first of all, I love collecting cookbooks. I may not use every single recipe, but especially if I can find like an old-fashioned or unique cookbook, I will get it from like a secondhand store or a garage sale. But yeah, the books being stacked up, the need for silence, the need to have that time alone. And it doesn't always happen because you need to create. You want to create. it's not, you know, it isn't just really, you know, I want to do this. It is, my soul cries out to do this. This is home where words congeal and brilliance hides beneath fresh thought and morning silence when chicks are fledged to deep woods beyond the city plate. And I really like the imagery in that and how it speaks on the idea of having to have that time to push everything else aside. And smoke from cheap cigars represents what can't be written, what won't be said, what a few would understand as ticks of kitchen clocks reach out to deafened ears. I have to say within those lines, maybe not the entire poem, but within those lines kind of has to me a slight flavor of Hemingway, which I truly appreciate. And I also really like the imagery and the metaphors of and alerting those who know its time and understand its pace that hastens blood, swirling with cheerful demeanor as a friend would greet a friend. You know, usually when it comes to writing poetry, it seems we're all have that, those certain times that it just clicks. And for many of us, we're morning people, that those sips of coffee or tea, that rising sun, those birds singing, that morning time alone allows you just to release what needs to be said. So wonderful, right, and very well done. Are you on mute, Lauren?
Oh, yeah. I'm not on mute. I beg your pardon. Not on mute.
Well, okay, that's all right. Would you like the dollar since you were on mute?
No, I'm not on mute. All right, we're on Graham Good. Which, oh Lord, can you believe that? I'm on the wrong poem, I think. Are we on Graham Greene's? Gerald Greene's?
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you, dear. Appreciate it. In this moment, this very moment, the newly conceived verse comes forth, covered with Vermex Speciosa, waiting to be presented to its now exhausted mother. I love the phrasing in that, the now exhausted mother, the writer of the thing. And you know, that's that moment of literary birth when the pregnant words burst into thought of their own volition, which is exactly the way it happens. I love that stanza, and I love the poem. And I love the comments as well, man. All right. Have you commented there?
I didn't.
Oh,
Naomi,
I was going to grant you a little bit of an exception because you said you were tired, but please go ahead and tell it.
Well, you know, I agree with everything you said. I just have to add, you know, I saw in this poem that, you know, he also talks about a little bit here and there, like the sentence. The lines, what won't be said, what few would understand, as ticks of kitchen clocks reach out to deafened ears. A way, you know, how we're touched as poets or writers or artists or, you know, painters or whatever, we're touched by different things that most people are just take for granted. And, you know, they don't really see anything into them, whereas us, an everyday event can turn into a poem. You know, we see things, you know, like in that smoke from the cheap cigar represents, you know, what can't be written, what won't be said, what few would understand. While we would read into it a whole paragraph, you know, a whole stanza. So I got that out of the poem too, but also, you know, the loneliness, you know, the wanting to be alone, because, you know, it happens to me, you know, when I'm in the process of writing a poem, it's like, get out of the way, you know, don't disturb me. I'm in my moment here, you know, and I'm the person, you know, some poems just flow out, but other poems, I work on them for days and days and days. And it's like, you know, people say, you know, you're lazy, you're not doing anything. Well, yes, I am doing something, you know. Leave me alone. So I get that, you know, and it isn't really loneliness. It's just that we are lonely because we create our own loneliness, but at the same time, we want it. So, you know, I thought this poem really, really addressed that, and I really like this piece. Wow. You know.
Great comment, like, Naomi. Thank you so much. Do you think, by the way, do you think that you want to look at the difference between loneliness and the kind of solitude that we need to write? Because
mm-hmm.
one is not the other.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes we feel, well, in my case, like I feel sometimes lonely because I isolate myself from other people to write. And then when I wake up, I say, oh, my gracious, you know, I haven't talked to my friends,
right,
you know, for
yeah.
the last week. So, yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah, we thrust ourselves into solitude, and then we bemoan the fact that we're lonely, but always after the fact.
Yeah.
All
right.
Yeah. I study that. Yeah. All right, Pam, bring us to the next one, please.
All right. Up next, we have Miscommunication by Joe Braz. And Naomi, would you please give that a read for us? Are you on mute, Naomi?
Oh, yes. I'm starting out well, eh? Miscommunication. Naked resident, nudist colony, blurts out information, personal, public, between the legs of those who expose their skin on surface and deep, within we allow them to see or not to be. Bus stop on the bus, we choose to go, some of us solitary, there are those of us who yap and yell. Once on the bus, but through the front door of condo rentals, being barns with yards, there's not a voice nor listening here, ear, so belch loud on the bus and hear. In style, current trending, bending rules, the coolsters, setting power, popular irregular flyers filled with waste, then chase away the clouds, shrouding stars, and light black sky dotted pinholes, silver glam, sparkle night, no moon, sight. A game called telephone whispered down the line, sprouts new words, falls apart from the start, drops off lips, floats midair, kaleidoscopes across synapses, landing in veneer, an altered statement laughs and handcrafts here. Headline, contact, end poem.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you so much. For some reason, I missed this poem when I was doing comments, but this is a great piece, and Joe Braz doesn't like that poetry. When he says, bus stop on the bus, we choose to go. Some of us solitary are those of us who yap and yell once on the bus, through the front door of condos, rentals, barns, and the yards. Not a voice nor listening ear, so belch loud on the bus and hear. It's almost as if the bus is a little world of its own. And within that bus, there's all kinds of things going on. And they're talking, and I get the strong impression that this is some kind of a school bus. Because on a normal bus, you're not going to have people just talking to each other willy-nilly. At least not the way the poem is talking about it. When he says, it talks about the coolsters setting popular irregular flyers filled with waste. They're throwing spitballs, things of that nature. A game called telephone, whisper down the line, spouts new words. Is that also a game that adults would play on a bus? I don't know. But it does talk about the fact that once people start talking, they make contact. Kaleidoscopes across synapses landing in an ear, an altered statement laughs. And handcrafts here. you are making contact. You're beginning that breakthrough, not just the bludgeoning one another with facts and theories gleaned from cursory readings of newspapers, magazines, and digests. This is what too many of us do, you know. We look at that 10-second Instagram vid and then talk about those 10 seconds as if it was something with depth. It's not always that, certainly. Pam, what did you think of this?
Well, first of all, I like your observations on how it seems to be like have references to youth, like the school bus, the game telephone. And that kind of makes sense with the title, which is a play on words with MISS and then communication with, you know, because you could imagine a teacher or a bus driver being called Miss Communication. But I like how he does use the game of telephone as a metaphor for how easily we can misunderstand each other. I really thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors and was an excellent write on the shallow exposure of self and the messages sent and received in a misconceived understanding of language. And what really gets to me is the first two stanzas with naked resident news colleague blurts out information, personal, public between the legs, and the idea that some people just want people to know everything about them. It's like they are almost proud of the fact that they're a braying ass. This is just...
Ha, ha, ha. That's great. A braying ass. Bravo. Yes.
But so true, isn't it? But yeah, this is an amazing write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Naomi, did you want to say a few words? Did you want to skip this?
Yeah, you know, when I was in college, we actually had courses on how to communicate, which seems pretty funny because, you know, everybody talks. But, you know, do we really communicate? That's the question. Like, everybody can talk, like, talk back and forth, back and forth. But are we really communicating? You know, in one of the lessons, they said to us, leave the other person talk, begin to talk. Because, you know, often people, most of the people, they're not really listening to you. They're thinking of what they're going to say next, you know, so they don't really listen to you. Anyway, and I thought this poem really hit on that, you know, that the miscommunication, because people are not listening to each other. And, you know, I really liked Pam's comment that, you know, some people are just there to smart off and to show, you know, just how great they are, you know, and they don't care about anybody else. So wonderful, wonderful right here. And, yeah, I think he addressed that prompt, you know, very, very, you know, spot on.
Yeah, very well spot on. You know, I agree with everything that you said, communication being so important. And it's not just interpersonal relationships. If you're a speaker at all, or if a newspaperman, or if you're going to interview someone on TV or read a news story, et cetera, there are certain rules. First, you tell them what you're going to tell them. Then you tell it to them. And afterwards, you tell them what you told them. And this is all designed to reinforce before and after what the message is.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that works.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Pam, lead us forward.
All right. Well, up next, I'm going to put my poem, which is called The Shaping of Clay Hills and Screaming Bones. And it goes like this. Some are reincarnated to breed contempt, black ooze of poison choking on mediocrity. Within this shallow place, they find not the glorious madness reeking of sex that fills the crying soul. The power of humanity lies within unreason. Crashing waves of time bowing to the spiral and orgasm, bare flesh exposed, intoxicating the senses to a point where emptiness is revealed and overcome with opium fields bleeding. We, the insane, the poets and artists, we are the salt of the earth, admirers of all that is life, death, love, and desire. We revel in throbbing organs, guiding the blood of sanity to that which is meant to be aroused in both lust and anger. Let this moment be for you. Let this moment be the water shaping the rock. Let our voices be cruel with desire, flames of agony to stud the flanks of rumps flexed and offered. Let us fall upon each other like the wind that breaks the dry leaves, rain which pounds the flesh into wild animals, crushing the rolling hills of grass. We open wide, screaming prophecies of green skies and love beyond understanding, the emotions that shape both man and woman, who are no longer clay and bone, but formations of thought and moonlight, writhing in the ecstasy of sacred creation. End poem.
Sam, that was just a great job. Both the read and the write. Bravo. Naomi, do you want to take a stab at this verse?
Oh, my gracious. What a powerful, powerful write. You know, this just screams off the page. You know, just, you know, there's so many lines in here. We the insane, the poets, the artists, we are the salt of the earth, admirers of all that is life, death, love, and desire. And, you know, you just address so many things, just, you know, so powerfully. Let us fall upon each other like the wind that breaks the dry leaves. We can just hear that crunch there, you know, that pounding. And you address the pounding in the next stanza, rain which pounds the flesh into wild animals, crushing the rolling hills of grass. We open wide, screaming prophecies of green skies. You know, this is so, so powerful all the way through. It's just amazing. Yeah, screaming bones for sure. You just, you let everything out here in this poem, Pam. You held nothing back, and bravo.
Thank you very much, Naomi.
Thank you for that excellent comment, Naomi. One of the two prompts that Pam wrote to was madness in prompt 5. Madness is toxic and invigorating, makes the sane more sane. The only ones who are unable to profit by it are the insane, in just the general tone. And I was puzzled by that prompt when I first read it. Then I thought about it, the more I thought about it, well, the more it made sense, if you think about it. Insanity sometimes is simply a different way of looking at life, a different way of looking at things. And by looking at things differently, we make observations that other people don't make, and we make them in language sometimes that other people wouldn't use. But it's exactly that new way of looking at things that help a saner mind gain a better understanding of the balance of life and everything that goes on. But if you're insane, if nothing makes sense to you, this is any new way of looking at things is not really going to help. And so now that I've said that, where is that part? The power of humanity lies within unreason. And you mentioned a glorious madness reeking of sex that fills the crying soul. You know, within sex, we find the crashing waves of time bowing to the spiraling orgasm, bare flesh exposed, intoxicating the senses. When we talk about intoxicating the senses, when we talk about violent emotions, when we talk about insanity or hatred, we are the poets, the artists, we are the insane for the moment. For the moment that we are in that little palace of solitude, of unreason, that's where we shine, because we are the salt of the earth, admirers of all that is life, death, love, and desire, things other people might not ignore or even bother to think about in philosophical terms, perhaps. I mean, there's so much in here that I just want to quote and continue talking about, but I don't know where we are in time. I got a feeling we got a lot of poems.
Yep.
But wait, rain which pounds the flesh of the wild animals, crushing the rolling hills of grass. Yeah, that's another stanza I really, really like. Capital job, my dear.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your keen observations and the inspiration. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay.
And up next, we have Polybrus Euphoricus Locus by Louie Wildove. And Lauren, go ahead, please, and give that a read for us.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You said she might not be able to make it tonight. And I did not find a translation for either the title or for the first stanza, so bear with me. Palabras euphoricas locas. Las palabras se pelean en la medianoche en una soledad insana. Letters configure with textures of forming sooty eyes over olive skin. Crisp, wintry, unsympathetic winds intensely, brutally bellow. Clouded, cleave, disjointed, lex, puffs. Over towering pines, conifers, ponderosa harmony scent, peace for rambling, unconnected visions. Searching for a grounding root, reddish violet, wincing, speaking voices cackling inwardly, thwart enemies' thoughts, corrosion. Scratch in the tender pinkness of flinching, throbbing eyelids, a lonesome cardo de leche, its significance, catalyst for incantation. Whispering with its hollow stem, pinion jays' nasal calls vibrate, echoes through wandering mental imagery, letters uttered, fermenting, an upheaval of forming words, draping soft velvet, long flowing sleeves, mise-en-scene, its sullen sweet meadow, devoid of smattering, scraping exportations, craving its solitude, vanishing a clean canvas of derangement, this constant chat erasing the gnashing of freaking grimy, grubby, certifiable psychotic hogwash, frantically imparting myself to breathe, touching the hairless, shiny, lime green-edged leaves, plucking painful needle points, bleeding its milky, thick, oozing veins in this rubble of faultless, moist pastures, its breast milk, sighing at its purple, elongated, synthetic air, tubular solitary bloom brush, trickling colored oil base, bristling imagery as my roller frame combusted into spraying sky canvas, pulling back the cloud curtains, words frolicked, pirouetted in tangible lines, towering pine audiences, blue sky palette in angular wash, fanning strokes, humming the string quartet 14, movement 1, broken chords, a floral maestro baton, moves fingered movements, pigmenting poetry, euphoric words scramble in midnights, insane loneliness, insana. Tempo.
Ooh.
What a poem. Bam, you get first shot here.
All right. Well, first of all, wonderful read there. Lou had requested a reader, and I told her, I said, I'm going to make Lawrence read this because the Spanish will sound really good in his deep voice. And she laughed and she smiled and she said that she would definitely be listening in tomorrow, and she was looking forward to hearing it in your smooth voice. And I have to say, I dare say that you will not have disappointed our Miss Louie Wildove. She will definitely enjoy hearing you read that. But
thank you. That was a hell of a poem.
It is, isn't it? I mean, it's absolutely brilliant, and she doesn't let up with the pace. I mean, it's not a fast pace, but it rolls along nicely, this smooth flow, like you're going up and down these rolling hills of imagery, metaphors, and emotion all combined together. And the main message that I got from this was how the creative mind is more open to the message of nature and to music, and is often criticized by those that don't understand this communication between the creative spirit and nature and music. Sighting at its purple elongated synthetic hair, tubular solitary bloom, brush, trickling colored oil-based bristling imagery as my roller frame combusted in a spring sky canvas. You know, some people just don't see the simple beauty in that thistle that's there for a poetic voice to see. This is absolutely an amazing write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Brilliant comment. Naomi, do you want to take a stab at this?
Oh, yeah, my gracious. You know, Lou, she just went on a rampage here. You know, and I agree with Pam. You know, she really takes elements of nature and she shows us, you know, how you can go off, you know, into that world and just explore it through words. And, you know, and other people, if you take that prompt, you know, madness and insanity, you know, and also the artist is alone. You know, some people, they say, how do you see such things in a poem or in nature or in a, you know, a simple flower, a simple blade of grass? It's just a blade of grass, but we can see it like so much more. Like she sees these elements of nature here, you know, so much more. And some people think we're crazy, and because of that, we're insanely alone, you know. So wonderful, wonderful write by Louie here. Just a powerful, powerful write.
It certainly was. And that was a great comment, Naomi. Thank you so much. When Louie writes, draping soft velvet long flowing sleeves, mise-en-scène, its sullen sweet meadow devoid of smattering, scraping exhortations, craving its solitude. I thought it was a brilliant way to describe impending solitude and madness, which descends an insanity of solitude, which informs reason, which I think is one of the greatest attributes of the insanity that we can feel of the moment. And I thought the use of nature in the early part of the poem was absolutely riveting. I mean, everywhere you look, the metaphors, quality, in abundance. I thought it was a magnificent write. Just a real pleasure to have it in the contest. Well done.
Right, absolutely. And up next we have Eternal Ecstasy by Stelina. And Naomi, go ahead, please, and give that a read for us.
Okay, I have to refresh my page here. Okay, there it is. Eternal Ecstasy.
Wow, what a picture.
Looking at that. Wow.
Sex is one of the 9 reasons for reincarnation. The other 8 are unimportant, by Henry Miller. Consummation of mutual attraction is the ultimate paradise on the earth. No other peak of physical sensation can reach its zenith of perfection. Never to be considered an aberration, but a renaissance of spirit or a youthful rebirth. All other pleasures fade with age, lack luster in twilight years, yet passion's touch never grows tired, the body always yearning to be desired, and the aching soul to be inspired, the call of the inner lustful beast, which instinctively domineers. In life, there are so many sorrows to quell the fear of demise, but sex is a delectation, a rare divine rhapsody, one that fills us with unparalleled ecstasy, which to live several lives for would be a clemency, and so eternity would echo everlasting with sybaritic sighs. End poem.
Thank you, dear. That I hate that word, sybaritic. That doesn't sound right. I don't know. Somebody's got to figure out how to pronounce that word. But we know what it means. Selena, that image. Wow, eternal ecstasy. I knew somebody was going to jump all over that particular quote. I think several people did. That consummation of mutual attraction is the ultimate paradise on earth. No other peak of physical sensation can reach its zenith of perfection. I have to agree, it is absolutely perfection. When she says all other pleasures fade with age, lackluster in twilight years, yet passion's touch never grows tired, the body always yearning to be desired, and the aching soul to be inspired, the call of the inner lustful beast, which instinctively domineers, passion's touch never grows tired. Too right, Selena. I thought you might like this prompt. Of all the things that helps us get through life, sex is one of the best things. Because most of the time, it's a loving moment between two consenting adults, and there is just the purity of the moment, holding of someone that you love in your arms. It's perfection, as she says. Nicely done, Selena. And Naomi.
You don't want me to go off on this subject, do you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my gracious. What a wonderful job she did with the, you know, just it's describing, you know, sex here. And, you know, it's true that you just, my gracious. Like you said, Laurent, it never goes away. You know, that wanting to feel that passion, you know, when you have that right lover and, you know, that just from that first kiss that just transports you to another place and your feet aren't even touching the ground anymore. You know, it's just, you know, I'm in my 50s here, but, you know, I hope it never goes away. I really hope it doesn't, because, you know, you always want that sensation. It's the most powerful sensation that you can feel, I think, is that, you know, the passion for another person. So, yeah, very well done, Selena. Well written and wonderful, wonderful write.
Great comment too, Naomi. Thank you. And, you know, that passion, that's hardwired. That's built in. Nothing more important than biological reproduction. Every animal has it. Every human has it. nothing you can deny. Stronger than we are. Bam, great read. What do you say?
Oh, this is amazing. I love the way she grabbed this quote and ran with it. Beautiful imagery and metaphors, a nice, delicate touch of alliteration that works well. I really like how this speaks on the beauty of sexuality, the importance and the power within it. And really, it is quite a passionate rite all the way through. But I really like how she mentions in the first stanza, the never to be considered an aberration, but a renaissance of spirit, a youthful rebirth, and the call of the inner lustful beast, which instinctively domineers. I like that. I love how she brings out the domineering of the wild beast that craves, that lusts after that physical contact. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Great comment. All right. We've got about 20 minutes. I'm not sure how many poems we have left. Do you know?
Let me check. Not a whole lot. We might be able to get them done. If not, it'll only be, a couple that we don't get to. But
all right.
I think we have around 5, give or take.
All right.
The next one is amazing.
And up next we have When Warmth Has Left the Room But Love Stayed by Hats. Naked neck, my fingers on the artery, I deny to believe what I see in his open eyes, his pupils like moths attracted by the light which helplessly approach somewhere that I could not be seen. They gaze through me, over and behind me. I shake him, salty eyes, blurry vision, and time goes on in its own pace. The snow falls down inside of his chest, fingertips pale blue, his bathrobe hiding his anchor tattoo, black coffee half drunk, ashtray full of butts, and his smile, which trapped me years ago, doesn't warm. End poem.
Wow.
Great, great read, Sam. Great poem, Pat. It's not long, but boy, is it good. And that's such a fine title, When the Warmth Has Left the Room, But Love Stayed. The second stanza, his pupils like moths, attracted by the light, which helplessly approached somewhere that I could not be seen. He doesn't see her anymore. And in the next two lines of the couplet, they gaze through me, over and behind me, anywhere but at her. And then she shakes him, salty eyes, blurry vision. Time goes on at its own pace. Yeah, for him. You know, one presumes they've been married for a long time. And they used to look at each other with loving eyes. But now that love has grown old, it's grown cold, if you will, there doesn't seem to be much warmth left in the relationship. They're kind of just coexisting. And she nails it in the last few lines. And his smile, which trapped me years ago, doesn't warm. When I read that, I went, oh, what a turn of phrase that was. The smile that no longer warms. Hats says an awful lot with that line. You know, time has shaded love. Love has become a skeleton that walks, unaware of its own body's death. I thought it was an outstanding take on the prompt. Naomi, would you comment, please?
Oh, yeah. You know, every once in a while, you know, I don't comment on a lot of poems, but this one, oh, my gracious. You know, when a poem really relates to you and, you know, it just catches you. You know, I reread this. I wrote to her. I reread this 3 times, and I think I even reread it more than 3 times. It's such a poignant write.
you know, and, you know, right from the first naked neck, my fingers on the artery, I deny to believe what I see in his open eyes. You know, she's bleeding out because of her love for him that is not no longer felt there, you know, and to have her finger on her artery is just that such a powerful, poignant image there. And, you know, all through the metaphors in here are just like, oh, my gracious, you know, just to die for. It was just amazing. You know, the snow falls down inside his chest, fingertips pale blue, you know, black cat coffee, half drunk, ashtray full of butts. You know, that shows you right there the kind of person that's just disconnected, you know, from life and from love and from everything and just living life without really connecting with the other person. Like you said, Laurent, you know, married couple that are just drifting through the motions there. And, you know, that last line, like you said, awesome. So what a wonderful write by Hatch, you know, such a talented writer. This just caught me and left me breathless. So bravo.
I could not agree with you more. The best poetry conveys an emotion that is hard to even put into words. It's something they understand as an emotion almost intrinsically. And that is what happened when I read this particular poem. Bam, your comment, please.
Oh, man, this is brilliant. It pulls at the heartstrings. It's a powerful and emotive write, amazing imagery and metaphors, and it speaks strongly on that which was once warm, that which was once a guiding light becoming cold and distant, and you feel that loss along with her. So amazing write, Hatch, and very well done. And up next, we have Bones of a Degenerate Drift Away. Apparently the extended version by Jenny the Deep. And Laurent, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Well, I hope I don't upset you if I ask a favor.
Yes, absolutely.
Would you or Naomi read this one? I would very much like to read Peter Salway's poem.
Absolutely. Naomi, would you give this a read, please?
Off mute, of course.
Oh, my gracious. I was reading along on mute. Bones of a Degenerate Drift Away. A savage was born out of the decrepit bones, battered and tossed across a river like stones, carried by the waves of invigorating insanity, mobilized by malignant madness of humanity. A vessel without a host is nothing at all. Only the sane make it through the great fall. Declared a worthless degenerate it to society, no other option but to run at full velocity. Thought I escaped a living nightmare into a dreamy life that is fair. I long for the insatiable and far-fetched to sail away from yesterday's doing what's best. End poem.
Great read, Dan. Thank you. Yes. Pam, could you start us off, please?
Absolutely. Great read there, Naomi. Wonderful rhyme and flow, amazing imagery. This to me was a rite that spoke brilliantly on the free spirit that longs for adventure, the kind of adventure that fills the soul with wonder. A vessel without a host is nothing at all. Only the sane make it through the great fall, declared a worthless degenerate to society, no other option but to run at full velocity. And, you know, we listen to the voice of society telling us that we're worthless. when in reality we have so much to let out, so much to give in the way that, you know, a free thinker arrives at conclusions. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. This poem was based on prompts 1, 2, and 5, which are basically, one, life moves on whether we act as cowards or heroes. Life is no other discipline to impose, if we would but realize it, than to accept life unquestioningly. And prompt 2 is concerning the taboos being broken. Whenever a taboo is broken, something good happens, something vitalizing. And prompt 5, madness is tonic and invigorating. It makes the sane more sane. And I think that's what we have in this poem. It's an accepting of madness and of life on its terms. You know, we're prepared to break the taboos that would normally batter and toss us like stones, as she says. This is short, but it's very impactful, these wishes for the far-fetched. It's a lovely write, Jenny. Thank you. And Naomi, please.
Well, you know, I agree with both of you. You know, the longing to escape, you know, your life, to live it to the fullest, you know, to be, you know, and the last poem, she addresses that, you know, thought I escaped a living nightmare into a dreamy life that is fair. I long for the insatiable and far-fetched to sail away from yesterday's doing what's best. You know, to sail away, just sail away, whether it's in dream or whether it's in reality, just to get out there and you know, live life to the fullest. Go on this wonderful adventure and drift away. So wonderful right here by Jenny.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, my dear. All right, Pam. Next, or last poem.
Yep, our last poem for the night will be Win the Lottery by Peter Solway. And go ahead, please, Lawrence, and give that a read.
All right. Win the Lottery. Henry and June inviting Marilyn, strong adults of timid virgin keen to learn, off-road, up slippery stream, their latest country acquisition, log cabin with private lake, bear skins within. Generous with their abundant winnings, inviting a shy Marilyn, witness creative process, coax her out of her poor girl's shell, loosened with oysters, wine, elastic straps undone, salacious poetry readings with prizes. Wrong, not Byron. Another article to doff sweet smiling. Henry becoming the dominant date, standing fisherman, making sure they watch him cast his rod, a mirrored shot of Miller froth all the way from Abraham. A generation of show-all exhibitionists, bugger D.H. Lawrence, swooning at the indifferent ceiling, as if bearded father watching, finger pointing at his inflated Adam, bad weather to come. Angels of flagrant urination, Venice to drown, etched in acid rain, gondoliers to huddle down, but to a touring turner, each day a new watercolor, whilst strong adults run and duck for cover. Hotel Freedom, foyer with fountain, Henry and June, the winter to shiver, skate over the river. Marlene into cooking, healthy child rearing, reciting strong adult ballads at innocence communal bedtime. Yes, your father once an all-night champion. Go it alone if we'd me and sister slut run out of lubricant. Phallus of a pharaoh, that illiterate man, just you wait, coming to tuck you in. Eric Gill, well, if you've heard of him, you'll guess what I mean. Life, art elastic. Angels in stone, epitaph in stenciled bronze. Here lies Henry June Stowe of Marlin. All recall to compost roots of determined pine, rest of Mel in skip bin. The published greats, once signing endless copies of dedication. Yes, all things must pass, vanish to the depths, dark with bright fish, schooled since the dawn of creation, mullet and herring, and swift elation, bubbles to burst upon the blue ceiling, black homelessness to come, pent in the park of endless space, Arlene wrecking her veins and smack. Too much strong adult history to comprehend. Masturbation used to work once upon a church bell time. When Henry in June, Sunday mornings, rain or shine, went to church in town all alone. Strong adults, repentant rooster, symbolic fornicator, doctor and nurse of wicked pleasure, choir and underwear. Moral Marlene in courtroom, no unrepentant Magdalene saying, Henry, June. Jury intent on remorse, willing, state of Texas decide. Lethal needle of final say, curtains to close, Henry and June deserved it. Filthy fucking literary fascists, vipers born of pedophile faggots, death a welcomed relief. Prince Charles, sending condolences, after all, companion of poets, American at that. Big ears depart the castle scene, ask advisor, who the F are Henry and June? Life, like art, never straightforward. Even Mondrian dreamed, Dolly preferred a cloistered cubicle. Picasso, a night alone, smoke himself stupid. Think strong adult thoughts and poem.
Ooh.
You know, I would have found a half a dozen or so stanzas in there that I would really have liked to quote, but, you know, there's no time or real space to do that. I just really liked what he did in his poem, and the bits of the bohemian facing a tortured relationship between the author and his wife. I thought it was genuinely fresh, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And Pam, what is your comment?
Wonderful read, Lauren. Great observations. It truly is fresh and insightful. Amazing imagery and metaphors. I told him in my written comment that Henry and June were definitely not the Cleavers. This was a creative and intriguing light on the whole exposure of self and lessons taught upon treaded bed springs that squeak quite noisily. So excellent write
that.
And really well done.
Thank you, Fran. And Naomi, please. If you're still there, off mute here.
Nope, Naomi did go.
All right, well, that's fine. She's tired. She told us she was tired before. And look, we only have a few minutes left, maybe only one. Did you want to say anything about anything coming up, Pam?
Well, people can join us in 30 minutes for Break On Through, where we'll be featuring poetry inspired by the art of Stephen Lurson. And, of course,
excellent.
Make sure to check out all the shows that we put up.
Yeah. And I invite everybody to return in half an hour and to listen to Pam. She always has a great show. Well, dear, that's it, I think. I can say goodnight to you, and I thank you for your stellar help here again tonight.
Great
you
show, Lauren.
Say
something
at this point. There you go.
Oh, I'm sorry. Great show, Lauren. Good stuff for sure. And
yeah,
have a wonderful night.
Yes. All right. Thank you and a good night.